recess.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Someone pointed out brilliantly that I keep saying the 25th. I forget to mention that that's February. That might just be a tiny bit of a crucial piece. So this, the full Odysseus Day is February 25th, not next week. So you can plan ahead, mark it on your calendar, put it in a marker, and hopefully come. So I thought I'd clear that up. A couple of people asked me some really good questions just as we were taking a break. And I guess the deal is we'll start with some questions, and then I know I will think of other things to add, so that's the way my brain works. Mm-hmm. Tom has asked me to repeat the question into the microphone so that it's picked up on the tape, CD, thing, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Are there questions? There's some? Yes.
Yeah. I did come up to you and said in my experience, I was trying to move that triangle around because I could see myself in movement going from the first half once in a while to the second, working on the second, then going to the third, then going back.
Okay, what is your name, Sherry?
Sharon Riley.
Okay, asked the question or stated that for her, the journey seems to have been back and forth, up and down, convoluted, circling around. Oh, here I am again. Now I'm over here. And I think that is reality. And it is, it's good that we pay attention to that, because if we think that we've conquered, finished, completed one task, and then it comes roaring back at us, we think there's something wrong with us, because we completed it. Well, not so. We're just looking at it at a different level. We're in a different place and something comes back. So most systems are circular, spirals, triangles is still pretty flat, but at least it gives you some idea of this is not a straight line. Mm. Life is not a straight line. Claire Graves developed a whole system called... that developed into spiral dynamics of all the spirals we go through, the cultures go through, the countries, and it helps explain a great deal. But we still spiral down, spiral in, go down, go up. So it's a little bit more like a roller coaster ride with one of those gyroscopes on a roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. Now, I get a little motion sick, so that whole explanation sounded particularly unappealing. Okay, thank you.
What's the name, Claire? Who wrote Spiral Down
there? Claire Graves, G-R-A-V-E-S. His was really the foundational work for what has become known as spiral dynamics. Don Beck has written a book about it. But if you can get the Gravesian, ooh, doesn't that sounds delightful, like dungeons or something. It's Gravesian. If you can get a hold of his work, it's wonderful. Okay, question in the back.
Could you talk about the importance of awareness and why that would be necessary? Otherwise, we're carried along by a tide. You know, we're not thinking about what's happening, but to be aware is important.
Okay, the importance of awareness. Where does that show up? Otherwise, we're kind of swept along by the tide. And thank you. I think that is clear in spiritual work, that there's a place where the alarm clock has got to go off. And then it has to go off again and again and again so that we wake up. And sometimes waking up can be painful, and sometimes it can be blessed. But that's the job, okay? To reach home and soul, awake and aware. We have been asleep most of our lives, and we all doze off again. I mean, I doze off. I know you don't doze off. But that idea of having a sense of being aware of what's going on inside and outside. It's in Enneagram language, it's also called witnessing yourself, knowing what your dynamics are, what your characteristics are, And then rather than doing the same old thing, the old habits, you catch yourself. Yeah. Maybe there is a different way to be, and it's awake and aware. Very important. And it shows up here, and then it goes back to sleep, and then it shows up, and you can be in that third half. And then, like the spirals, like the sleepiness, we settle down, or something happens. How do we negotiate on the roller coaster? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I can give you an example of that. In Richard's book, he talks about the first half is the time of no, and as you move into the second half, it's more yes. And yesterday, my wife and I went out for lunch, and when we came out of the restaurant, she said, "Let's go for a walk." And I wanted to say no.
Are you doing this again?
I wanted to say no. But there was just that glimmer of awareness that said something like, "Bernie, don't do that." I did not say, "Now that you're in the second half of life, you can go for a walk." You know what I'm getting at.
Thank you. And I think that a long time ago, like 6 years, I had a study group, an Enneagram study group that met at one particular house, and they had this little old dog. I forget his name. He was so old, maybe he didn't have a name. But he would wander around inside, and then they'd put him outside, and he'd wander around. He couldn't find all the doors and windows, you know, so he'd be gone for a while. And then all of a sudden, he'd find a door or a window, and he'd bark, you know. So right at some crucial place in my teaching, one of those profound moments when you come up and your wife says, "Let's go for a walk." And then we call this a woof moment, where we were talking about that dynamic. And just as I paused for effect, the dog went woof. So from then on, that whole group was always talking about, "Well, have you had any woof moments lately?" You know? And it's that place where there's something. You know, I used to do this. Woof. There is a different way to be. There is a different response. I can breathe, I can do this, and I can respond differently. So now you can all use the woof moment. I have not copyrighted that. Or whatever you do about words that you say out loud. So yeah, that's great. That's great. Just those little places, something different. And behaving differently. Mm-hmm. Okay, they say change is hard. No.
Oh, I can't
say those words on. Okay, anything else? Yes.
I was just reflecting on the idea of the third. And
I'm sorry, could you stand up? I have a little hearing loss. But
so what occurs to me is that there's such a tendency to create a chronological idea of all of this. And maybe since I'm just entering what might be termed the second half, there's a sense that the third, when you brought it up, I thought, well, maybe the third is present throughout the first and the second, and that there has to be some layer that sort of transcends the idea of the chronological. And so I was just noticing that the tendency myself to want to sort of, "Oh, well, this is better if you're here, or you're more enlightened in this part." But that really that is happening throughout, and there's aspects of things in the first half of life and things in the second half of life that maybe we can't have them again, but they serve, I don't know if I'm making sense, but they sort of serve their place and have their own sort of enlightened element to them when they occur, and that they're still kind of there when we then go into the second half. So I don't know, that was just one of the thoughts I had about sort of an overarching third that remains consistent through both.
Well, do I need to repeat something?
No, I think we got it.
Okay. Absolutely. Just what she said. Okay, so can you hang on to your questions for 1 second, please? Thank you. Absolutely. And Richard Rohr uses the phrase transcend and include. And it talks about states and stages where you're doing something and then you kind of can feel that it's no longer the way I am. I was that, but I've transcended. I've kind of moved up here a little bit, but I still include the knowledge, the experiences, the moments from that first place. Now, Ken Wilber, actually, I believe, he coined that phrase of transcend and include. So you're really moving upward through this kind of nested stack of experiences, and none of them are gone. They all pull each other up. And so the idea of a third half of life, that idea of being present and being and paying attention and waking up and awareness and saying yes, are present all the time. But how much attention we give them, how much we are aware inside of those decisions we make helps us transcend and include even more. Okay, is that making sense? Toward non-dual mysticism. Okay? All right, let's take this question first.
It's more of an observation. We're in this world today as we talk, not the other world in terms of experience. So much of my background and experience of being trained spiritually has been to prepare for the other world. And as I'm evolving in my understanding or experience, I'm experiencing that this is where it's here, and this is where it's at. The other, looking toward the other world doesn't seem to satisfy me anymore. I want to find out what's, I should look here, not there.
Thank you. And there's a place where Rohr in the introduction talks about egoic structure a little bit, and he says that the ego, I could find it maybe, the ego worries about the past and the future and sits in the present. Well, I'm not so sure. I think the ego, maybe something, I don't know, but here's what I take, and that's what I'm kind of hearing, is that the only place is the present. And that scares the ego right out of its skin, which of course is our skin. The past is gone. We can long for it, which is kind of weird. But that's what we do. Oh, the good old days. You know, I didn't go to my prom. You forgot to mention that. That's a big piece of my history. Or we, in a pseudo predicted sense, worry about the future, and it keeps us anxious in all kinds of ways. And what do we have? Bingo, right here, right now, the present. Only. Okay? So, there again, it kind of makes me, that is sort of different sense of who's in here. It's really kind of cool to just be here, be now, have some woof experiences, and that's it. Non-dual mysticism. Way far out. It's very cool. Okay, Tony has a question and we'll come back.
No, I thought.
Oh, okay. Christine, is that right?
Christine, yes.
Oh, cool.
I was just trying to put in concept and
here.
I can give you the
line. Oh, thank you.
I was trying to put in context the second half of life in terms of our own life and on a time scale. I think there's two ways to look at that too. I heard a brain scientist once speak, and she was saying how the brain goes through different changes at certain times, and like at menopause, she said they discovered there was a great push towards rhythm, and it has to do with the prefrontal cortex. So it's as if God implanted certain moments to awaken us. And whether we act on it, of course, is up to us. But I've seen it among many of my friends around menopause. Suddenly the job doesn't work, the husband doesn't work, nothing works.
and it's
some crisis. And I think that's part of maybe God's programming our bodies for giving us another chance to take the journey. But beyond that, I've also observed that some younger children seem to just be born or souls.
Yes.
I have a niece who was one of four, a quadruplet, and she's radically different from the other four, three, even though she was raised the same way. And I think she has been on that second half since, I don't know, since age six. She's so wise, and her parents are not even anywhere near where she is. So there is no time element to it, and yet there is a time element.
Right.
It's one of those God paradoxes, you know. Well, that's what I... Oh, wait, and then the last one was I heard in one of my adult ed classes, it's a Hindu legend about the man and the ox. I forgot the details about it. He looks for enlightenment, and he goes through all these hard work. He does everything on the second journey, and he finally reaches, it seems like everything, he's home, he's enlightened, and then he has these sage he talks to, and he goes, now what, you know? And he goes, well, now you go back to the first house. And help the others. So, and that's how the circle was closed.
Thank you. Thanks. Is it Gordon?
Yes.
Okay. Can you speak up? Can you speak loudly enough, or do you want this?
Am I speaking loud enough?
Yeah. Oh, it's Ed is Gordon. Ed. Okay.
In my life, I can say I'm definitely in the second half. That happened because of age, not because of wisdom. There were certain things that happened to me, that at the time they happened, I did not see them as transitional. Okay, I did not see them at all. So I had to go past them and look back to see, because they were very, as Richard called it, liminal. I was in a liminal space. I was confused or whatever. But now they all make sense as to where I am now. I'm not so sure, and maybe that's because I don't know whether I'm there or not, but I'm in the third phase. But I don't think the transition is as emphatic from the first to the second as from the second to the third. I think you can kind of slide into the third, so to speak.
We can slide into the third or slide
the first.
Well,
the first to the second usually is traumatic.
Yeah, I agree. There's something. Thank you.
Can you share about entrance into the third?
Certainly. I thought you would never ask. Okay. Do you want to have something that you want to...
Well, yeah. When you said it's absolutely true, I think that the first and second, that for myself and for my husband, it's been traumatic. And it's been forced. Usually it's external or like... could be like an illness, but it's frequently external also. And then, you're right, the third is always there. It's always there. And when I have noticed it, it's sometimes in the second period due to, usually an illness for me, where I am forced almost to notice the third. And then you can fly back into... But it is, I think you're completely correct on, and Michael as well, that you're there, it's there always, and we just haven't needed to take the time, it has been whatever it happens to be. That's true.
Right, thank you, Tony. And some was, she was talking about the idea of the transition from first to second, usually, in some way or another, is kind of from an external. Something happens to us. It can be bigger or biggest. But that tipping over or getting into the third half usually has a different characteristic, and Ed said the same thing. Now, I like the idea or the metaphor of your third half of life dawns on you.
Yeah.
Now, I get up really early in the morning. It's kind of an insanity thing, but I get up really early in the morning, and I watch it dawn almost every day, and it is not sudden. It takes a long time. Like 4 o'clock in the morning, it's really, really dark where I live. It's probably dark where you live too, but you don't realize that. A lot of people don't. But there's this little subtle thing. Now, I face south from my window, so you can sort of, it's not dark, but it's not bright. And then the colors, and then you get some clouds, and then you can see how foggy it is out, so you can't see anything at all. I do live in the Central Valley, you know, we get fog like with the leaves, but it dawns. It takes a long time. And these last several weeks, months, all the buildings, I live out on a ranch, the buildings are covered with frost. And it takes a long time for the sun to hit them and for that frost to start to melt. And it is quite methodical. It starts here, and then so pretty soon only the pockets, only those little shadows. Oh, we could do shadow work. Let's do some shadow work. So only what is still in the shadow remains untouched by the dawn. So I think that idea, and Ed, thank you for bringing it up, is it just dawns on us. It takes time. It warms us a little here. It keeps our toes stay frozen because it's still cold down there. Little by little, these kinds of things dawn on us. Okay? People say middle age. I've now finally accepted the fact that I'm middle aged. Just this year, I'm going to be middle aged on the supposition that I'm going to live to be 130. Jim?
I have to interrupt with the crisis of now because I overlooked Elizabeth. Elizabeth needs to talk to us about how you can all help us out as the days go by, as the months, as the weeks go by. Interruption.
Well, that was dawning.
This is now crisis.
Sorry about that.
Oh, good. Yeah. No, thank you.
That's okay. You're
welcome.
It's all right.
Okay, what I want to talk to you about, number one, is some of you are registered on those yellow sheets in the front, but we do not have a phone number or an email address for you. So would you please check on the sheets and make sure you have a phone number and an email address, because that is important when we put you into a color group so that you will be notified when it's your turn to bring refreshments. Okay, and speaking of the color groups, I wanted to thank the purple, the royal purple today, who did a beautiful job. Yay, purple. Yeah. Yes, and next week to follow that will be the orange group. So any of you who are in the orange group, be prepared to show your prowess next week, whatever it may be. And one of the other things I wanted to say is some of you, the color groups, because we have 10 sessions and we only have 8 color groups, sometimes there's 2 groups who will have twice, who will have to bring refreshments twice, and it rotates through the color groups. Last time it was, you know, 2 of them. This time it's a different 2. So anyway, just if you are scheduled twice, that's why. So don't complain to the chairman and say, well, we did it already. You know? All right. And then, and then the other thing about the color groups is when you are on, try to be here at 9:30 to help set up, because it takes some time to get things set up. Mm-hmm. And then be prepared if it's necessary. Most of the time it really isn't, but be prepared to stay afterwards to help put things back in order. Okay?
Any questions about that? And the other thing is, if you are not assigned to a color group by next week, let me know so I can take care of it, okay? All right, thank you. Now, Catherine, okay. You can come back.
Okay, thank you. And if you know somebody who isn't assigned to a color group, turn them in. Equal opportunities. Okay. Speaking of detail, please do stop and pick up flyers. I am doing this Odysseus thing in Santa Barbara on February 25th. Sign up for email. You know, if you'd like to be on my email list, I will be doing some other kinds of workshops. So please let me know who you are if you want to hear from me. Don't want to hear from me, don't sign up. Because I'm relentless. So I think that was it. So there's lots of stuff over there. You can register for the 25th right now. There's still forms for that. Anyway, I'm done. All right, sir, Jim.
Yes. You know, I've gone through my second half, we're taught when we're little that God is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I've asked the question, if God is everywhere, why, when we die, do we have to go some to be with him? And I have developed doubts about whether there is an afterlife. I don't know whether there is or not. If there is, it's going to be gravy for me. But as I slide into the third half, I feel that heaven is right here. This is heaven. This is the present is where heaven is. If you look for it. And
especially if you live in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, try saying that Fresno.
They kind of answer your question about when you come home, you get to the end of the second height, then what? Well, that's what.
Yeah. I think that, thank you, Jim. That, I think that's beautiful. And I remember, when I was taking training for spiritual direction, it was a huge, huge thing for me because it was so other than everything I had done before. Now, and I don't know, I can give Martha credit for this because she's in the room, but I don't remember for sure. And she said, God is in the coffee grounds. Yeah. Huh. And I can't tell you how many times I've suggested to directees that when you're grinding the coffee, when it's cooking in the pot, that's God. That sense, the taste, the smell, God's there. God's in the ordinary. So, yeah. And it's here. It's now. Thank you, Jesus.
Yes.
When you're in the presence of creativity, you're in the presence of God.
You bet. That's why I call myself an artist. And ultimately, when you look more and more at not only the Christian traditions, but many other traditions, the moment when you say, I am God, is your moment of truth. Mm-hmm. Everything else is a lie. Mm-hmm. Think about that one. Okay, somebody else. No, I mean, here, we are the same. One, no boundaries. Non-dual. I am Jesus Christ, God, Spirit. I am. Okay, well, let's go from there. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for presenting today.
You're welcome.
I particularly enjoyed and appreciated using mythology to illustrate our journey with the better illuminated. And it's always funny with serendipity. Now you have one of the gags here, now we have to go read the Iliad. But I'm always struck by serendipity. There was a podcast just a few months ago on the Economist website that there's four new translations of the Iliad that just got published. So I'd recommend it's a I'll write it up on the board later where you can access it. But I found it fascinating. Their literary editor reviewed them, and they were done from very different perspectives. So it's a great choice of books to choose from now if you want to read it.
Well, I think I said this, but I'm going to thank you. Thank you. I will say it again, because for those of you who have any sense of who, how, where you are on the Enneagram or how the Enneagram works, if you travel the Enneagram from, not forgetting that you're a number and you're stuck there, you're not, but for our outward journey, we go clockwise. We set our goals, we get people to help us, we're on it. Let's go. How else can this happen? I better learn some more stuff about this. I need to make a decision. Well, let's have some fun. I'm the big one, and now I can rest. Now, that was a very quick journey around the Enneagram for those of you who are paying attention. Okay. The journey to home travels the Enneagram counterclockwise. Odysseus goes counterclockwise. Undoes that first half. Isn't that cool? And we have to assume that Homer knew nothing about the Enneagram. But he knew a great deal about life, about insight. Okay, there was another question that was popping up. Gloria.
Speak loudly.
Okay, I'm Gloria, and I just want to put in a word for the Enneagram, because Catherine mentioned the unconscious in the second half of life, and I had found that the Enneagram work, about 10 years I've been doing it or more, has brought that forward or upward or whatever. So understanding your number and then utilizing your energy to go to different numbers has been really helpful. And then this book, The Odyssey, has helped visualize that, what that number looks like and how the arrows help different parts, different numbers help you move up and how you disintegrate, for better words. But it's really helped me find out where the attention goes from, maybe from my childhood. It's always been going that way. So I think the more I have integrated that Enneagram into the second half of life and become aware of the beauty and the good, but also the unconscious that we don't want to look at. That's tricky, because it's not always pretty. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Thank you. The good, the true, and the beautiful. The three great philosophical tenets. The good, the true, and the beautiful. We, each individually, are the beautiful. No exception. The good is who we are as community. Whatever that community might be, if the community is the beautiful, is the good. And the actual exterior is the true. What you can measure. It's kind of the scientific part of that three. But the good, the true, and the beautiful, where do you fit? Pretty cool. Okay. Yes. Bob, did you have a question?
You're referencing a lot of things that are going to be related to our book of the fall.
And I'll be back.
I presume you know Ken Wilber, because he only mentioned his name three times.
Only three? What book are you going to study?
Integral Christianity.
Oh, far out. Integral Christianity or spirituality?
Christianity. It's a book related to viewing the church through Ken Wilber's model.
Is that new? Did he write that?
No, it's written by Paul Smith, a Methodist minister of all things, but
really, can you imagine? Yeah, it's neither Jew nor Greek, Catholic or Methodist. Gloria,
yeah.
I think it's in that brown bag that's underneath there. I brought along the little bright blue board book.
Bright blue.
If it's not in there, then it's in the rolly. Okay.
Vision Internal.
Yes. This book. Bob, do you think you could bring it up? This
because Ken, how many people have read Ken Wilber? Yahoo! Yahoo! He can be a little, what would we call that?
Systematic.
Yeah. Oh, I don't say anything bad about Ken Wilber. in preparation for your fall, you have not enough to read around here. In preparation for that, if you've not read Ken Wilber, or even if you have, this book has, first of all, it has beautiful graphics in it for those of us attached to the fourness and the artistic, creative side of ourselves. But it boils down his theories, his philosophy in graph form. He brings in other people, and he created this little, it's like the kindergarten board book. You don't need all the words.
The title, say that, the title.
It's The Integral Vision. It's a wonderful book, and I know you can get it on Amazon. Sometimes you can actually find them in those things. You know, remember, you open the door, walk in, go through the stacks, libraries or bookstores. But I know it's available on Amazon. The Integral Vision. It's kind of like a illustrated short course in Ken Wilber. Wonderful.
Did you buy him?
Yes.
I'm sorry? Yes. He is the author. He's only written like 26 books. What is he doing in spare time? Mary, I was like, did you saw it, didn't you?
Yeah. I'll put in a plug on something else you've mentioned with the spiritual direction, which can be very helpful, I think, in helping us notice the moment in our presence today. Stillpoint.ca is a website that has information on how to connect with spiritual directors and spiritual directors.
Thank you. There was another hand floating around. Ginny.
No. Just along the same reference to your artwork. Years ago, I did a religious IST conference, and the theme of it was, we are God's work of art. And that was so powerful. I think at the conference, that's what I got. And a work of art, you don't judge it if you don't think it's beautiful. You look at it and try to go into it and accept that version of it. And it seems to me that has fascinated me, of every person being God's work of art and what God is manifesting through each one.
Yeah. What she said. God's work of art. Yes, wonderful. Thank you. I think as well, one of the things that I really enjoyed about your sentences right there, they all had verbs in them. Now, I know, if you're an English teacher, you know how important verbs are. But I'll tell you, if you read some of this really esoteric, spiritual stuff, it doesn't have verbs. And it actually has a tendency to put your brain asleep. It's a kind of a hypnosis. So when you find someone who speaks with verbs, or you find someone who writes with verbs, grab it. Because we relate to people. We're not in relationship. Things are manifesting. Things are changing and growing. It's not the manifestation. Things are manifesting. Get with it. Get active. Get into the verbs. So thank you. Very verbal verbs. Yes.
When are you coming back to us?
Next time you invite me, I would love to come back. Thank you. Thank you. Liz.
Okay. One thing I forgot to mention.
Come up here. Come on.
I have your attention. No, with your name tag, please don't go out and take them with you. Take them off, and if you would fold up the
cord. Oh, look at it. There's another idea. We're having a demo. That's right. You know, there's one more thing about thirds. that we just had demonstrated. First, there's the rule, so which we just heard about, and then there's those who break the rule, because that must have been happening. People were taking their name tags home, and now we're living within the rule. And Tom even demonstrated how to do that elegantly. Get the core inside the inside the name tag.
Do it.
There. Excellent. Okay. Anything else we're leaving uncluttered or cluttered? Choose it.
Thank you.
Please.
Thank you.